Our speaker today is Ben Hicks. Ben has worked in the information technology industry for 16 years. He is an advocate for collaborative practices and open source software. He's a member of the Nashville Linux Users Group and serves as the secretary of the Nashville 2600. And yes, I know it's actually pronounced Linux, but it's spelled Linux. Ben obtained an associate's degree in theology from Beacon University and has a strong interest in the areas of communication and effective mediation. The title of his sermon is Nonviolent Communication. Let's welcome Ben.
Sermon. I like talk better. All right, so I see that we have a big crowd today, and this is my first time speaking since I was 17. So your mileage may vary. Don't judge the whole UU experience by my talk, okay? So the first thing on the piece of paper says, don't read all the time. I will begin with a quote from a great sage of our time. Violence and smut are, of course, everywhere on the airwaves. You cannot turn on your television without seeing them, although sometimes you have to hunt around. Dave Barry. So I would like you all to think about my next statement, and we will revisit it a little bit later. When I stand up here seeing all of you, I am quite nervous because my need for competence or appearing competence may not be met if I don't communicate these ideas well in the next few minutes. First, I want to say that we're seeing a decline of violence worldwide year by year, month by month, and that's fantastic. I'm reading a book right now by Steven Pinker. It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature. You probably heard it come out a few years ago. And it's just amazing how far as humanity has come in just 300 years, much less the beginning of time, since all, and even with counting things like World War II or other things, violence is still down across the world. So as we're kind of educating and growing and becoming more conscious of it, it is decreasing. And that's really positive, and it makes me really happy. So just throwing that out there. All right. We have a long way to go to eliminate violence, and it could be that it's the very way that we think and speak that causes violence. And I don't just mean physical violence under that category. I think we can all agree that the very way we use our language can create violence and abuse. So I'd like to begin today by reading a poem that Dr. Rosenberg uses when illustrating a point in his course. The poem is called The Mask, and the author is unknown. The Mask. Always a mask held in the slim hand whitely. Always she had a mask before her face. Truly the wrist holding it tightly fitted the task. Sometimes, however, was there a shiver, fingertip quiver, ever so slightly holding the mask? For years and years and years, I wondered, but dared not ask. And then I blundered. I looked behind the mask to find nothing. She had no face. She had become merely a hand holding a mask with grace. I often feel when I'm talking with people that I am engaging with them in a very superficial way. How's the weather? How you doing? It's not really a connection. And at heart, that is really what I think nonviolent communication is about. Also, a little caveat there. These are my opinions and my interpretation of all that I've read. So, again, your mileage may vary. It isn't a way of speaking as much as it's a way of thinking about how we connect with other people. So who was Dr. Marshall Rosenberg? Marshall Rosenberg was a child of nine when his family moved to Detroit in 1943, and that was a week before the 1943 race riots. He shares in his course about being stuck in his house for a week while 34 people were killed just in his neighborhood, and that made a big impact on his life. And he goes on to describe how on the first day of school, when the teacher called his last name, Rosenberg, a boy in front of him spun around and asked him if he was Jewish. And he said that that was what started a cycle of being bullied and beaten after school because of his last name. So he always had this kind of interest in what drives people to violence. What is it that makes us hurt others? He shares a story that in elementary school, he was hiding in the back of the room after all the other kids had gone home for the day when one of the teachers noticed him hiding there. And the teacher said, "What are you doing here? You can't be here." And Marshall said, "There are some boys waiting outside to beat me up, and I'm scared." And the teacher replied back to him, "Boys don't get scared." And I bring that story up because particularly in the baby boomer generation, and some of the same sentiments have been passed on, is that boys aren't supposed to be emotional. You know, no crying, you're tougher than that, et cetera, et cetera. This has led a lot of men, especially, to not really even have an emotional vocabulary or a way to express what they are feeling meaningful to other people. I go to a men's group that deals with just trying to work on that aspect of increasing the sort of emotional vocabulary that we use. So now, what's nonviolent communication? Nonviolent communication was created by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg in the 1960s. He was a practicing clinical psychologist and was very interested in mediation and what caused violence to begin with. He based a lot of his work off of Dr. Carl Rogers' theories of behavior in organisms. So caveat to that as well, Dr. Rosenberg never really liked the title nonviolent communication. And Gandhi was the same way. They didn't like that because it's saying what something's not versus what it is. But everybody knows it by that title, so it kind of got stuck. And that's why it's called that today. Personally, for me, this has caused a lot of confusion and questions too. Because I was part of a nonviolent practice group here in Murfreesboro last year. And as I'm telling my friends about it, I would get sort of like raised eyebrows, and they would say things like, do you have a problem with violence? Or do you have anger management issues? No, you know, so it's not really an effective. He prefers the term compassionate communication. So Dr. Rosenberg would say that violence is a tragic expression of an unmet need. And so let's suppose that feelings, and thus actions based on feelings, are results of needs that are met or unmet that we have. In other words, we all have needs, they're all universal, and our emotions and our feelings and our actions based on those are all of them getting met or not, and hopefully that didn't glass over anybody's eyes. So let's go back to the statement at the beginning. When I said that statement at the beginning about how I was feeling, did you feel a connection to me? You may or may not. NVC is concerned with connecting authentically with other people by talking about what's alive in us, or in other words, how we are feeling right now and what is the need that is causing the feeling. I said, I am feeling nervous. Why am I feeling nervous? The first thing that comes to my mind is, I don't want to look like a fool. But that's not using NVC. NVC would be kind of rephrasing the language in your head to say, well, that's saying what I don't want to be, number one. And number two, the word fool has all these connotations and judgments and all this stuff. No, what's really at work here? My need to feel competent, my need to look good in front of everybody, or at least not seem, you know. So that is using kind of NVC at work, just as an example. Let's go to another example, because I don't want to get too technical. I come home from work, I open the door, and Priscilla is standing there, arms folded, foot tapping, and giving me a glare. This may or may not be based on truth. She crosses her eyes, gives me a glare, and says, "Why are you always so lazy?" Time out. So let's pretend we are Priscilla and we're trying to express our displeasure. There are four basics to the NVC model that we're going to add, and we're going to add a fifth because it makes it easier to remember. So imagine I have a virtual whiteboard up here for a second, and I'm going to write five letters on it: S, O, F, N, R. The S is for stop. That's the one we're adding. Take a breath, count to 10, whatever. The O is for observation. The word lazy, the word fool, those aren't observations. Those are judgments. When using NVC, we want to use observational language, like science, just as if it were a camera recording the events with no judgment on the matter. The F is for the feelings. We want to communicate the emotion we are feeling and the need, and that's the N, behind the emotion. When we finish all that off with an R, which is making a specific request of some kind. So back to using our Priscilla example, it might go something like this. When I arrived home today, I found that the ice cream was out on the counter with the lid off. The cat ate the ice cream and threw up three times on the couch and carpet. I am feeling angry that my need for order and ease were not met. Now, isn't that brilliant? She counted three times. It's awesome. Great job. Her quest might be something like, would you be willing to sleep out on the patio for the next week? NVC is primarily concerned with connecting to other people. And so to me, it is helpful to think this way. As children, we modeled what we saw in others in our lives with our feelings and how they express them. So some of us bottle our emotions. We don't let them out. Think of the men that I mentioned earlier. Or we ignore them. Or we may express them violently or in some ways that alienate us from others. And that's what we're concerned with. So getting behind the masks and communicating in an authentic way on the level of needs. So I'm going to now get a little more into each of the letters I wrote up here on my virtual whiteboard, and let's talk about the O. The Sufi poet Rumi wrote, "Out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field, and I will meet you there." When I first began learning the NVC process, I really became aware for the first time of just how much moralistic, judgmental language I use day to day. I'm going to read from Dr. Rosenberg's book for a minute to do this better. The highest form of human intelligence is the ability to observe without evaluating. Krishnamurti. When initiating an exchange with others, we want to begin with a very specific observation about what the other person is doing that isn't enriching our life. We want to leave out any words that imply wrongness and judge others. Examples: you're always late. This is an assessment. Rephrased, when you arrive 45 minutes later than what we had agreed upon, I feel. You're such a kind person. That's a judgment. Rephrased, when I saw you sharing your lunch with Chris, I felt. About judgments, NVC encourages the use of value judgments and discourages the use of moralistic judgments. It's important to differentiate between the two. Value judgments, these are judgments based on identifying the needs and values that are met and are unmet by actions taken. The needs for care and respect, for example, are common to all people. With clear awareness of their needs or values, we can identify and make clear observations and about actions and behaviors that may or may not be in alignment with our needs. I'm trying to rush through because there's a lot to cover. I got time. I don't have much time. So we speak and hear judgments language so often it becomes our second nature. They're fat. He's ugly. That's stupid. Our tendency is to categorize, and we lose touch with ourselves and other people just by the language we use. So do we stop using judgments altogether? No. We absolutely have to make value judgments all the time, but we're going to separate that from moralistic judgments. Think about this, for instance. Let's suppose I go to Kitty and say something like, hang gliding is bad. And even if I just think that, I'm not going to connect with her, and she is going to have no idea what I'm really communicating with her if I said it out loud, other than I don't like hang gliding and I might have woken up on the wrong side of the bed. How could I do this better? I could say, I think hang gliding is bad. Then at least I own that and I'm not making a general rule to the universe about hang gliding. I still don't think that's good enough though. How much more clear and able to connect with me would she be able to if I said, Kitty, when I see you jumping off the side of a mountain holding poles with fabric attached, my need for safety is not met and I feel afraid. Notice that how that statement that I never used the word, well, I did use the word you in relation to her jumping off the mountain, but in relation to my needs and my feelings, they were all my own. I owned them. That's an extremely important point, because how many of us say things like, you made me angry, or you are always late, and how often does that lead to a misunderstanding and disconnection? So it's one of the founding principles in NVC that we take responsibility for our feelings and our needs and not others. I'm going to read just briefly here some of the feelings examples here. Expressing feelings is an opportunity for us and others to connect with what's alive in us. To do this, we need to be able to differentiate between words that genuinely express feelings from other words that appear to do so but do not. So an example, I feel you're always criticizing me. While the word feel has often been used, an evaluation has been expressed rather than a feeling. So let's rephrase that. When you tell me that I didn't do a good job, I feel hurt. I feel that things are just going to get worse. Again, a feeling has not been expressed. Instead, this is an assessment of a situation. Rephrased, after seeing the medical results, I'm feeling really scared. The cause of feelings. We are never the cause of other people's feelings. Feelings arise based on whether or not needs are being met and thoughts that we have. Other people's actions may trigger us, but they are never the cause of our feelings. Examining our reactions when we're triggered will help us gain awareness and clarity so that we can choose to respond in ways that will better serve us and others. Here's another example, internal dialogue. I've been waiting to be served for over 15 minutes. These waiters are so inattentive, they're really making me mad. Using NBC, I can instead become aware of my feelings and needs and discover that I'm feeling impatient, not because of the waiters, but because I'm needing consideration. Other examples of language that implies that others are responsible for our feelings are you and he and she and it makes me feel. I feel hurt because you, he, she, they. These words deny personal responsibility and are disempowering to the speaker. And there is a website called the Center for Nonviolent Communication, if anybody else finds this helpful. And they can you can go there, and they have a list of feelings and a list of needs. And I really like this model because it allows me to think in terms of what's happening. I mean, brain studies show that our thoughts, our judgments, we justify what we think after it already comes. So we're already feeling this. Why are we feeling it? And just stopping and asking that question, I think, is really valuable for me personally. Needs. Needs are referred to as values, are common to all people. The universality of needs makes them easy to identify. Examples of needs would be food and shelter, caring, attention, love, trust, respect, connection, understanding, and contribution. To experience compassionate connection, it is essential that we express our needs and connect with the needs of others. The qualities of a connection we desire will not occur until we connect at this level. So at Nonviolent Communication, we do our best not to confuse the needs with the requests and or the strategies. If we move too quickly to strategies, others are likely to conclude that we are not as interested in their needs as we are in our own. However, the chances of getting what we want increase dramatically when we value everyone's needs and place our attention on connecting with feelings and needs before seeking solutions. And if we can also remember to include no reference to specific people during specific things as we express our needs, once we've connected at the level of needs, we can begin to expose strategies for meeting these needs. It's kind of technical, so going back to examples. A parent speaking to a child who has not done assigned homework. I need you to do your homework. The real need here might be that for the child's growth and learning. It could be rephrased as, I'm feeling anxious. I really value your learning. I would like you, would you be willing to get started on your homework right now? Employee to employer. This report is due tomorrow and I need your figures now. The real need here is for support. This could be rephrased as, I'm feeling some apprehension because I'm needing support with this report. Would you be willing to provide me with your figures right now? The last part of this whole thing, you know, where Priscilla asked me to sleep out on the patio, is called requests. And nearly always when we were communicating with others, we're wanting something back from them. In such exchanges, it is vitally important to end with a doable request. We therefore want to have clarity and awareness of what specific actions we would like that might contribute to meeting our needs. If we do not end with a request, people can easily feel confused about how to respond. They may blame themselves when hearing about our unmet needs, and they think that they are somehow the cause of our pain, or they may blame us for expressing pain, and they don't know how to fix. Either will result in further alienation. So the types of requests, connection requests. When our immediate need is to be heard and understood or to hear and understand others, we could request the following. Would you be willing to tell me what you heard me say? Or would you be willing to tell me how you feel about hearing me say this? Or an action request. Once empathetic connection is established, we can proceed with the action request where specific strategies can be explored. In making our requests, we want to express what we would like the other people to do rather than what we don't want them to do. Would you be willing to look into my eyes when we talk? Would you agree to have this report on my desk by 10 a.m. tomorrow morning? Request versus demands. One of the words, would you be willing, or use of the words, would you be willing, convey to others that we are in fact making a request, not a demand. We're open to receiving a no and learning from the other person that what needs of theirs would not be met by acting on our request. Now I just spent a good bit of the talk outlining the process and how we communicate to others in a way that could create connecting and authenticity, but now I want to flip to the other side of this, because most of the time it's the other way around, right? Or we remember this. We're not trying to express ourselves. Somebody's coming at us and saying, you know, you don't deserve that. You talk too much. You never get your work done on time. My friend never calls me. She thinks only of herself. So what NVC is concerned with that is we kind of enter into the thought world here, thinking about what other people are saying in terms of what need, what feeling they have or what need they're having. The same softener model applies here on the receiving end, and sometimes it's better to just be silent. If your goal is to truly connect and understand that other person, you're trying to hear the need behind the judgment that they are leveling at you or someone else. It's called empathy guessing, and the goal behind it is to understand what the other person is feeling, and eventually, even if it's non-verbally, getting to the need behind the judgment. So I'm going to read that part of the book real quick. Empathy. For the most part, empathetic connection happens silently. It is the quality of our listening that creates the connection. When we are connecting empathetically, the words we use will naturally be rooted in empathy. We facilitate empathetic connection when our only intention is to connect with the other person because it meets our own needs and witness what's alive in them. We are fully present and have tuned out any mind chatter, such as thoughts or theories that we might have about this person. We are completely focused on the other person, tuning solely into their feelings and needs. Once empathetic connection is established and everyone clearly hears everyone else's needs without hearing criticisms or demands, solutions reveal themselves with ease. Many times when a person needs empathetic connection the most, they will be feeling strong emotions and may be expressing themselves in ways that make it very difficult for us to hear their need. We may be hearing criticism in their words, or we may want to quickly find a solution for their problem. Strategies such as problem solving, giving advice, evaluating, explaining, correcting, sympathizing, or questioning, even when well-meaning, are blocks to empathetic connection. It is therefore critical to remember two things if we're to enjoy giving empathy to others. We are never responsible for how another person feels. It isn't our job to make that other person feel better. We're just trying to connect with them on their needs level. Because empathetic connection is such a wonderful gift to ourselves and to others, there is great value in honing our skills through practice. The following is an example. Friend to friend, I feel really attacked by what you just said. And you could even say it out loud or think it. You're feeling hurt because you're needing some respect and understanding in our conversation. So, clear as mud. I try to think logically and systematically, and it's just who I am. I'm a computer tech. And this is really where NVC helps me out, because there's not a model, there's not a guidebook for our emotions. And when I found this, it was really kind of a light that went on in my head. So it may not be for everyone, and it may not, the language can seem kind of off sometimes, but for just thinking in terms of that, it really helps me out. So the system is not perfect, and sometimes time is pressing and we don't have time to connect with another person. Sometimes the wording and the phrases can seem awkward and not natural to real life conversation. There are ways of sounding much more natural. They call it street giraffe, and we could go into that some other time. But I get that sometimes we just don't have the time or energy to think like this. But when we do, it can really transform how we deal with other people. So I'll end this with a joke, as now you all understand how NVC works, just like I do. So light bulb jokes. Question. How many NVC practitioners does it take to screw in a light bulb? Answer. 4. One to observe and share that pressing the light switch has no effect on the bulb getting bright. The second to share his feelings of annoyance and sadness about it. The third to realize and share that a new light bulb would meet needs for safety and ease. And the fourth to ask the other three to actually screw it in. Question, how many NVC trainers does it take to screw in a light bulb? Answer, when you find yourself in the dark, are you afraid because you're needing some safety? Thanks, everybody.
Ben, I feel the need for the notebook that has the notes in it that I'm supposed to read from. Ben speaks. Thank you, Ben.